听力考试马上开始，请戴上耳机。录音开头有一段试听声音，约一分半钟。听力考试将在试音结束后正式开始。现在开始试音。
In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Example. You will hear, When shall we start our work, Jane?
Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, but we must work quickly, for we have to finish everything before 2 in the afternoon.
For how long can they work? You will read, A, 2 hours, B, 3 hours, C, 4 hours, D, 5 hours. From the conversation, we know that the two are talking about some work they will start at 9 o'clock in the morning and have to finish by 2 in the afternoon. Therefore, D, 5 hours, is the correct answer. You should choose D on the answer sheet and mark it with a single line through the center.
试音结束，听力考试现在开始。
College English Test, Band 6. Part 3, Listening Comprehension.
Section A, Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2, with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations. Question 11. I don't know what to do. I have to drive to Chicago next Friday for my cousin's wedding, but I've got a psychology test to prepare for.
Why don't you record your notes so you can study on the way?
What does the woman suggest the man do? Question 12. Professor Wright, you may have to find another student to play this role. The lines are so long and I simply can't remember them all.
Look, Tony, it's still a long time before the first show. I don't expect you to know all the lines yet. Just keep practicing.
What do we learn from the conversation? Question 13. Hello, this is Dr. Martin from the emergency department. I have a male patient with a fractured ankle.
Oh, we have one bed available in Ward 3. Send him here and I'll take care of him.
What are the speakers talking about?
Question 14. Since Simon will graduate this May, the school paper needs a new editor. So if you're interested, I'd be happy to nominate you.
Thanks for considering me. But the baseball team is starting up a new season, and I'm afraid I'd have a lot on my hands.
What does the man mean? Question 15. Have you heard the news that James Mill has resigned his post as Prime Minister?
Well, I got it from the headlines this morning. It's reported that he made public his decision at the last cabinet meeting.
What do we learn about James Mill? Question 16. The morning paper says the space shuttle is taking off at 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah, it's just another one of this year's routine missions. The first mission was undertaken a decade ago and broadcast live then worldwide.
What can we infer from this conversation?
Question 17. We do a lot of camping in the mountains. What would you recommend for two people?
You'd probably be better off with a four-wheel drive vehicle. We have several off-road trucks in stock, both new and used.
Where does the conversation most probably take place?
Question 18. I hear you did some serious shopping this past weekend.
Yeah. The speakers from my old stereo finally gave out and there was no way to repair them.
What did the man do over the weekend?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Now, could you tell me where the idea for the business first came from?
Well, the original shop was opened by a retired printer by the name of Gruby. Mr. Gruby, being left-handed himself, thought of the idea to try and promote a few products for left-handers.
And how did he then go about actually setting up the business?
Well, he looked for any left-handed products that might already be on the market, which were very few, and then contacted manufacturers with the idea of having products produced for him, mainly in the scissor range to start with.
Right. So you do commission some part of your stock?
Yes, very much so. About 75% of our stock is specially made for us.
And the rest of it?
The rest of it now, some 30 years after Mr. Gruby's initial efforts, there are more left-handed products actually on the market. Manufacturers are now beginning to see that there is a market for left-handed products.
And what's the range of your stock?
The range consists of a variety of scissors, from children's scissors to scissors for tailors, hairdressers, etc. We also have a large range of kitchenware.
What's the competition like? Do you have quite a lot of competition?
There are other people in the business now as specialists, but only as mail-order outlets. But we have a shop here in central London plus a mail-order outlet, and we are, without any doubt, the largest supplier of left-handed items.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What kind of business is the man engaged in? Question 20. What does the man say about his stock of products? Question 21. What does the man say about other people in his line of business?
Conversation 2. Can we make you an offer? We would like to run the campaign for 4 extra weeks.
Well, can we summarize the problem from our point of view? First of all, the campaign was late. It missed 2 important trade fairs. The ads also did not appear in 2 key magazines. As a result, the campaign failed. Do you accept that summary of what happened?
Well, the delay wasn't entirely our fault. You did, in fact, make late changes to the specifications of the advertisements.
Actually, you were late with the initial proposals, so we had very little time. And in fact, we only asked for small changes.
Well, whatever. Can we repeat our offer to run the campaign for 4 extra weeks?
That's not really the point. The campaign missed 2 key trade fairs. Because of this, we're asking you either to repeat the campaign next year for free, or we only pay 50% of the fee for this year.
Could we suggest a 20% reduction to the fee, together with a 4 weeks extension to the campaign?
We are not happy. We lost business.
I think we both made mistakes. The responsibility is on both sides.
Okay. Let's suggest a new solution. How about a 40% cut in fee or a free repeat campaign?
Well, let's take a break. We're not getting very far. Perhaps we should think about this. Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 22. What do we learn about the man's company? Question 23. Why was the campaign delayed according to the man? Question 24. What did the woman propose as a solution to the problem? Question 25. What does the man suggest they do at the end of the conversation?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear 3 short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. The University of Tennessee's Walters Life Sciences Building is a model animal facility, spotlessly clean, careful in obtaining prior approval for experiments from an animal care committee. Of the 15,000 mice housed there in a typical year, most give their lives for humanity. These are good mice and, as such, warrant the protection of the animal care committee. At any given time, however, some mice escape and run free. These mice are pests. They can disrupt experiments with the bacterial organisms they carry. They are bad mice and must be captured and destroyed. Usually, this is accomplished by means of sticky traps, a kind of flypaper on which they become increasingly stuck. But the real point of this cautionary tale, says animal behaviorist Herzog, is that the labels we put on things can affect our moral responses to them. Using stick traps, or the more deadly snap traps, would be deemed unacceptable for good mice. Yet the killing of bad mice requires no prior approval. Once a research animal hits the floor and becomes an escapee, says Herzog, its moral standing is instantly diminished. In Herzog's own home, there was a more ironic example. When his young son's pet mouse, Willie, died recently, it was accorded a tearful ceremonial burial in the garden. Yet even as they mourned Willie, says Herzog, he and his wife were setting snap traps to kill the pest mice in their kitchen. With the bare change in labels from pet to pest, the kitchen mice attained a totally different moral status.
Questions 26 to 29 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. What does the passage say about most of the mice used for experiments? Question 27. Why do the so-called bad mice have to be captured and destroyed? Question 28. When are mice killed without prior approval? Question 29. Why does the speaker say what the Herzogs did at home is ironical? Passage 2. There are roughly three New Yorks. There is first the New York of the man or woman who was born here, who takes the city for granted and accepts its size and its turbulence as natural and inevitable. Second, there is the New York of the commuter, the city that is swallowed up by locusts each day and spat out each night. Third, there is the New York of the person who was born somewhere else and came to New York in quest of something. Of these three trembling cities, the greatest is the last, the city of final destination, the city that is a goal. It is this third city that accounts for New York's high-strung disposition, its dedication to the arts, and its incomparable achievements. Commuters give the city its tidal restlessness. Natives give it solidity and continuity. But the settlers give it passion. And whether it is a farmer arriving from Italy to set up a small grocery store in a slum, or a young girl arriving from a small town in Mississippi to escape the indignity of being observed by her neighbors, or a boy arriving from the Corn Belt with a manuscript in his suitcase and a pain in his heart, it makes no difference. Each embraces New York with the intense excitement of first love. Each absorbs New York with the fresh eyes of an adventurer. Each generates heat and light to dwarf the consolidated Edison Company.
Questions 30 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 30. What does the speaker say about the natives of New York? Question 31. What does the speaker say commuters give to New York? Question 32. What do we learn about the settlers of New York? Passage 3. If you ask me, television is unhealthy, I said to my roommate Walter as I walked into the living room. While you're sitting passively in front of the TV set, your muscles are turning to fat, your complexion is fading, and your eyesight is being ruined. Shh! Walter put his finger to his lips. This is an intriguing murder mystery. Really? I replied. But you know, the brain is destroyed by TV viewing. Creativity is killed by that box, and people are kept from communicating with one another. From my point of view, TV is the cause of declining interest in school and the failure of our entire educational system. Uh-huh, I kind of see your point, Walter said softly. But see, the woman on the witness stand in this story is being questioned about a murder that was committed 100 years ago. Ignoring his enthusiastic description of the plot, I went on with my argument. As I see it, I explained, not only are most TV programs badly written and produced, but viewers are also manipulated by the mass media. As far as I'm concerned, TV watchers are cut off from reality, from nature, from other people, from life itself. I was confident in my ability to persuade. After a short silence, my roommate said, Anyway, I've been planning to watch the football game. I'm going to change the channel. Don't touch that dial, I shouted. I want to find out how the mystery turns out. I'm not sure I got my point across.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 33. As the speaker walked into the living room, what was being shown on TV? Question 34. What does the speaker say about watching television? Question 35. What can we say about the speaker? Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
In the past, one of the biggest disadvantages of machines has been their inability to work on a micro scale. For example, doctors did not have devices allowing them to go inside the human body to detect health problems or to perform delicate surgery. Repair crews did not have a way of identifying broken pipes located deep within a high-rise apartment building. However, that's about to change. Advances in computers and biophysics have started a micro-miniature revolution that allows scientists to envision, and in some cases actually build, microscopic machines. These devices promise to dramatically change the way we live and work. Micro-machines already are making an impact. At Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, research scientists have designed a 4-inch silicon chip that holds 700 tiny primitive motors. At Lucas Nova Sensor in Fremont, California, scientists have perfected the world's first microscopic blood pressure sensor. Threaded through a person's blood vessels, the sensor can provide blood pressure readings at the valve of the heart itself. Although simple versions of miniature devices have had an impact, advanced versions are still several years away. Auto manufacturers, for example, are trying to use tiny devices that can sense when to release an airbag and how to keep engines and brakes operating efficiently. Some futurists envision nanotechnology also being used to explore the deep sea in small submarines, or even to launch finger-sized rockets packed with micro-miniature instruments. There is an explosion of new ideas and applications, so when scientists now think about future machines doing large and complex tasks, they're thinking smaller than ever before.
Now the passage will be read again. In the past, one of the biggest disadvantages of machines has been their inability to work on a micro scale. For example, doctors did not have devices allowing them to go inside the human body to detect health problems or to perform delicate surgery. Repair crews did not have a way of identifying broken pipes located deep within a high-rise apartment building. However, that's about to change. Advances in computers and biophysics have started a micro-miniature revolution that allows scientists to envision, and in some cases actually build, microscopic machines. These devices promise to dramatically change the way we live and work. Micro-machines already are making an impact. At K Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, research scientists have designed a 4-inch silicon chip that holds 700 tiny primitive motors. At Lucas Nova Sensor in Fremont, California, scientists have perfected the world's first microscopic blood pressure sensor. Threaded through a person's blood vessels, the sensor can provide blood pressure readings at the valve of the heart itself. Although simple versions of miniature devices have had an impact, advanced versions are still several years away. Auto manufacturers, for example, are trying to use tiny devices that can sense when to release an airbag and how to keep engines and brakes operating efficiently. Some futurists envision nanotechnology also being used to explore the deep sea in small submarines, or even to launch finger-sized rockets packed with micro-miniature instruments. There is an explosion of new ideas and applications. So when scientists now think about future machines doing large and complex tasks, they're thinking smaller than ever before.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. In the past, One of the biggest disadvantages of machines has been their inability to work on a micro scale. For example, doctors did not have devices allowing them to go inside the human body to detect health problems or to perform delicate surgery. Repair crews did not have a way of identifying broken pipes located deep within a high-rise apartment building. However, that's about to change. Advances in computers and biophysics have started a micro-miniature revolution that allows scientists to envision and in some cases actually build microscopic machines. These devices promise to dramatically change the way we live and work. Micro-machines already are making an impact. At Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, research scientists have designed a 4-inch silicon chip that holds 700 tiny primitive motors. At Lucas Nova Center in Fremont, California, scientists have perfected the world's first microscopic blood pressure sensor. Threaded through a person's blood vessels, the sensor can provide blood pressure readings at the valve of the heart itself. Although simple versions of miniature devices have had an impact, advanced versions are still several years away. Auto manufacturers, for example, are trying to use tiny devices that can sense when to release an airbag and how to keep engines and brakes operating efficiently. Some futurists envision nanotechnology also being used to explore the deep sea in small submarines, or even to launch finger-sized rockets packed with micro-miniature instruments. There is an explosion of new ideas and applications, so when scientists now think about future machines doing large and complex tasks, they're thinking smaller than ever before.
This is the end of listening comprehension.
现在听力考试结束，请取下耳机，开始第四部分的答题。